Good morning. Thank you, Your Honors. The parties litigated several issues in their final trial briefs in front of the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board, including priority, deceptive use in that Biogrand alleged that SunBio improperly used Korean Food and Drug Administration labels on the product included with their specimen, misrepresentation of source in that Biogrand claimed that Biogrand is the only understood source of products marked with BF7, and that by using that trademark, SunBio was misrepresenting the source of their products, and various theories of fraud. However, the only ground ruled upon by the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board that Smart Nutri was the true owner of the mark was not in the initial briefs of either party.
What about appendix page 2301 through 02, and also appendix pages 2328. In those pages, I see discussion of Smart Nutri and how the specimen that the registrant submitted to the USPTO was actually marked with Smart, that actually had Smart Nutri identified. There's several other statements on these pages that refer to, that this product was actually made for Smart Nutri. Mm-hmm. And Smart Nutri, there was no agreement between Smart Nutri and respondent, and there was no control on page 2328. I mean, do you agree? Why aren't those pages sufficient? Let me ask you that first.
So I believe Your Honor was first citing the background section of the brief, which discussed the general background Smart Nutri and SunBio. Your Honor, it is our position that simply including a background of the parties is not a sufficient argument of the specific legal theory that Smart Nutri was the true owner of the mark, and thus the registration is void.
But there are the facts that are necessary for that theory. And then on page 2328, they specifically say that there was just one sale of the Smart Memory product made for Smart Nutri, a foreign company unrelated to Respondent. Smart Nutri was not a wholly owned subsidiary of Respondent. Respondent admits there was no agreement with Smart Nutri, no license, no assignment or transfer of goodwill. Respondent, not Smart Nutri, had any control as to the nature or quality of Smart Nutri product. Now, so why isn't that enough to raise the issue?
Your Honor, the specific page that you are citing to, I believe, 2328, is in a section on an allegation of abandonment.
But could it be, first of all, there's no ownership, and then second of all, even if there was no abandonment, why couldn't that, if this page be read as I've just characterized it?
Because, Your Honor, it is not appropriate for the board to inference arguments not made by either party, especially when there is multiple interpretations of the evidence that were utilized. As stated in the PAB case, which we cited, it is improper for evidence for one argument to be used for another argument that was not raised by the parties.
This is a notice issue, right?
It is. It's a due process issue, Your Honor.
What would you have done differently, if anything?
Yes, Your Honor. There is significant evidence in the record, specifically in the trial transcript of Mr. Thomas Chang, who is the owner of both SunBio and Smart Nutri, that there was an agreement that Smart Nutri sold products in Korea and SunBio was the only entity authorized to utilize the trademark BF7 in the United States.
What about all the testimony from Mr. Chang himself? The only evidence I saw about the relationship between those two companies was the testimony from Mr. Chang himself saying that he worked really hard to keep those companies separate.
Yes. They're separate, Your Honor, but that has nothing to do with who had authorization to use the BF7 mark in the United States. If they're separate companies, but there was an agreement that only SunBio would use the mark BF7 in the United States, they can still be separate, but there's an agreement as to utilization of the trademark.
If that evidence is in the record, where is it?
So specifically on appendix page 1949, there is, and several other places as well, there is testimony from Mr. Chang that only SunBio would use the mark BF7 in the United States.
Okay. Because it could not be used. Page 1949. You need to slow down.
Excuse me.
I haven't gotten there yet. Okay, so what part of 1949 should I be looking at?
Okay. Your Honor, I'm just going to grant my...
Sure.
So, Your Honor, on page 69 of the transcript, excuse me, Your Honor, page 68, on the bottom, starting at line 21, he references he was trying to launch a product in the United States for a product that was marked with BF7, starting on line 21.
What does that have to do with the relationship between these two companies?
That the understanding between his two companies was that Smart Nutri would not utilize the trademark BF7 in Korea, but SunBio would utilize the trademark BF7 in the United States to sell a product. And if there, it is our position that if there was an agreement between...
So this would have made all the difference right here. This testimony, which you already had in front of, in the record, that's the thing that you would have relied on, that had you known this was going to be an issue?
So, Your Honor, it is our position that this court has the ability to reverse the decision on due process grounds because those arguments were not raised in the trial briefing. However, if, to answer your question, if SunBio had the opportunity to address that issue, I would have pointed to appendix page 1949 to demonstrate the agreement between the parties that SunBio would be the only one that used the mark BF7 in the United States.
Even though that one specimen, which is the only one that exists, says Smart Nutri on it.
Your Honor, the registration does not just claim finished products. It also claims powders, gummies, etc.
I'm just asking. I'm asking, am I correct that that's the only specimen that exists? Is that right?
Well, Your Honor, that was the only specimen that was submitted in the registration. It's not the only good that's been marked with BF7.
And it is marked with Smart Nutri, right?
Correct. The specimen submitted with the registration is marked with Smart Nutri. That's correct.
Can I say, as a matter of law, is it your understanding that the TTAB had to conclude that Smart Nutri owned the mark, not SunBio? Or would it have been enough if they concluded SunBio did not own the mark?
It would have been enough if they would have concluded that SunBio did not own the mark. That is true. That is the law, that a registration is void ab initio if the applicant does not have either ownership of the mark or permission to register the mark in the United States. That is true.
And why isn't their decision supported by the idea that, as Judge Stoll just pointed out, that there was only one specimen submitted and SunBio isn't mentioned anywhere on it, but Smart Nutri is? Why isn't that sufficient for the PTAB to conclude you haven't established ownership of the mark?
First of all, Your Honor, we have the due process argument that allegation was not in the briefing. And second of all, the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board did not address evidence in the record that would support the agreement between Smart Nutri and SunBio such that SunBio had permission to register the mark in the United States. So had the parties addressed that in briefing and had SunBio had the opportunity to argue that theory of the case and the board had made a decision after that argument...
I thought the board concluded that there was no agreement between these two companies.
The board has discussion on whether or not SunBio controlled use by Smart Nutri. The board did not reach a decision on whether or not there was an agreement in place between Smart Nutri and SunBio such that SunBio could register the mark in the United States.
I have a question for you. On your blue brief at page 12, you say, in its petition to cancel, Biogrand did not specifically argue that Smart Nutri was the owner. Then you say, Biogrand asserted that SunBio was not the rightful owner, but did not allege that Smart Nutri was the owner. So if you agree that in the petition, Biogrand asserted that SunBio was not the rightful owner, why do we need to go on? Why isn't that enough to have given you notice?
it is not sufficient to allege in the petition that someone else is the owner. It has to be briefed as well, and I would cite Novosteel for that argument. And in addition, Your Honor, the argument presented by Biogrand was that Biogrand was the owner. It was not that another entity was the owner. And so, again, there was no notice to SunBio that that was an issue of contention in the trial briefing because it was never made. And so, Your Honors, the first reference to this allegation of ownership by Smart Nutri was not made until the reply briefing, specifically on appendix page 2369, which was two pages of argument within the 68 pages of briefing by Biogrand. And I'm almost at my rebuttal time here, so if there are no further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Very good. Okay, thank you, Mr. Farrell. We'll hear from Mr. Lee.
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
Mr. Lee, please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I want to very quickly address one argument that Mr. Farrell has raised and emphasized in his reply brief. This argument that SunBio didn't really have adequate opportunity to respond to Biogrand's contentions. First of all, we disagree, obviously, with SunBio's argument that the ownership issue was not raised until the reply brief. It was made an issue very clearly of the cancellation petition, that's Appendix 0039. We raised the point and the argument and referred to the evidence in the opening brief, Appendix 2302 to 2303 and 04. Appendix 2329.
Counsel,
and the board.
Counsel, what specific language? I think you were relying on the petition at pages A38, 39. Which paragraphs are you referring to? 23 and 24 or something else?
28, perhaps, Counsel?
So the cancellation petition, yes, Your Honor. Your Honor. The question is on the 0039.
Thank you.
Yes. And that fact was acknowledged by the by TAB, TTAB, in footnote 21, appendix 0012. Now, having said that, I want to address this argument that even if this point had only been brought up in the reply brief, it's not true that SunBio had no way to address or seek relief and respond to those arguments. SunBio really makes a short shrift of the PTAB Manual Procedure Rule 543 that actually expressly permits litigants in SunBio's position to file a separate motion for either a reconsideration, a rehearing, or modification of the final decision. SunBio is, and Mr. Farrell is very dismissive of this particular procedure. And I think he says that motions for reconsideration are a waste of time and they're rarely granted. Well, that's not what the position of PTAB is. Rule 543 says there's no requirement that an adverse party file a brief in response to a request for rehearing.
Uh,
Rule 543, as well as 804 of PTAB, basically states that even though the motion for reconsideration is not required for appeal and is obviously discretionary, it's good practice to do so, number one. Number two, analogizing the motion for reconsideration procedure available before TCAD to motion consideration available in the federal court, there is plenty of case law, including case law from this court, that states that the purpose for motion for reconsideration is really judicial economy. So it's not a waste of time because it does make sense to resolve disputes, procedural disputes of this nature regarding notice, for example, and whether arguments and evidence was properly presented the court below before the finder of fact, to have those issues resolved at the before the trial of fact at the court below. For example, in Delaware Valley Floral Group Inc. versus Shaw Rose Nets, 597 F3D 1374 at 1383, that's a Federal Circuit case, 2010, this court points out that the three primary grounds that justify reconsideration are an intervening change in the controlling law, the availability of new evidence, and this is a key point, the need to correct clear error or prevent manifest injustice. In that same case, again, on page 1384, the court says that motions for reconsideration are appropriate where the court has patently misunderstood a party or has made a decision outside the adversarial issue presented to the court by the parties. That's exactly what Sun Bio is claiming happened here. And there was a clear procedural mechanism available before TTAB that Sun Bio could have resorted to in order to resolve the situation and introduce additional evidence or additional arguments or rebut or raise these very points regarding the jurisdiction of the TTAB to resolve or to address certain issues before the finder of the fact.
Counsel, you just said that in a reconsideration motion he could have raised new arguments or introduced new evidence. Is that correct?
Well, let me qualify that. He could have addressed the arguments raised in the reply brief by BioRed. Again, we do not concede that point. However,
but in fact, don't the rules expressly prohibit him from trying to introduce new evidence in a reconsideration motion?
That you're correct, Your Honor. But he could have rebutted the arguments made by BioRed in its reply brief and pointed to the record before the trial of fact. And raised the arguments that he thought that would have addressed the reply brief. And again, if Sun Bio believed that it was outside the jurisdiction or power of the TTAB to rule or decide on certain issues, as he is arguing now, that could have been done and should have been done before TTAB. And there was a mechanism to do so.
Mr. Liu, let me ask you, at page 39 of the appendix, we have part of the petition in paragraph 28. There's been some discussion of it. Clearly raises the issue of ownership of the mark. Okay, I think Mr. Farrell would agree with that. But what is your view on the law as to the impact of a statement or a claim in a petition? Does that carry over throughout the proceedings before the board? In other words, once you've stated a contention in the petition, such as this, is it there to be argued about, or do you have to say more about it as the proceedings go along?
Well, the petition puts Sun Bio on notice, and in our trial briefs, BioGrand did raise the issue of ownership, and that's the evidence and the arguments are actually cited by TTAB. The opening brief on 2302, appendix 2302 and 2303, appendix 2329. Mr. Farrell wants to have a very, very narrow reading of what the rule requires. I mean, it seems like by his standards and by his argument, a BioGrand would have to recite line by line each legal argument that he intended to or was intending or trying to raise before the PTAB. That's just not the case. It's enough to allege or make sufficient arguments and point to the evidence that puts SunBio on notice of the arguments that BioGrand is.
You're saying, excuse me, Mr. Lee. You're saying that in response to my question about the petition making the claim of ownership, or the claim with respect to ownership, you say that this was raised specifically in the briefing, your trial briefing at what, 2302?
2302 and 2303, Your Honor.
Where does it talk in? I mean, I have some of that marked, and there is a lot of discussion about various items, but I don't see anything specifically about ownership of the mark, per se. In other words, picking up the contention that's in the petition.
You're saying
it's there by implication?
It's there by implication, as well as on Appendix 2329.
I'm sorry, 2329?
2329, last paragraph on that page.
The last full paragraph or just the last paragraph?
That'll be the last paragraph.
Under the Lanham Act?
Yes. To own trademark rights, a trademark owner must make a bona fide use of its mark in the ordinary course of trade. Bona fide use means genuine proof for use in the relevant trade, not nominal sale, merely to reserve rights for a mark. The record is full of evidence indicating that SunBio is not...
Counsel, that's just a statement of what the law is. How is that an allegation of whether or not they did, in fact, own the mark? This is a statement. Under the Lanham Act, to own trademark rights, a trademark owner must make a bona fide use. Where is your conclusion arguing that they didn't do so here and therefore don't own the mark?
Your Honor, it was sufficient for notice purposes for BioGrand to make the argument that ownership required use by the registrant of the mark, adoption by the registrant of the mark, and to present evidence that supports that.
Where do you say that they didn't do it?
It's in the opening brief, Appendix 2302, 2303. Now, Mr. Farrell is very dismissive of those points because it says it appears under the background section. We don't think that whether arguments and presentation of evidence or submission of evidence appears in a section that's entitled background really should have an effect on the PTAB's ability to review that evidence.
Mr. Lee, excuse me for interrupting you, but sort of time is fleeting, and I did want to just catch on one point here. You directed our attention back to 2302 and 2303, and I don't see anything there about ownership. Is your contention that even though ownership is not specifically stated on those points, that it's kind of a necessary undercurrent to what's being argued?
That's correct, Your Honor. I don't think that an express statement of the argument word by word is really necessary when the law concerning the ownership of trademark that requires the ownership of the trademark by the registrant is stated in the opening brief, together with all the evidence indicating all the activities that would have purportedly created ownership rights on the trademark to SunBio actually was not carried by SunBio and actually was carried out by a separate party.
What about page 2328? Are you lying? I think you cited that in your brief as supporting your argument that you were making the ownership argument at least implicitly. It says, notwithstanding all the facts, assuming arguendo that a single token sale of smart memory could be attributable to the registrant. Do you see where I'm talking about? There's a paragraph above that Are you relying on that for your assertion that ownership was before the TTAB?
That would be an additional basis for putting somebody on notice that the ownership issue was being articulated by background. Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Lee, let me ask you one further question. We have here, it's undisputed that the petition raises the issue of ownership. Let's assume for the moment, this is a hypothetical, but let's assume for the moment that that statement was not in the petition, that paragraph. Would you then be out of luck?
I don't think we'd be out of luck. I think you'd be contextual.
I shouldn't say out of luck. Would you lose on the law?
Well, I don't think it would have been determinative, Your Honor. I think whether some bio was put on notice is really an issue that has to be looked into given the totality of the circumstances. And the TTAB rules on that issue, I think, confirms that. And the TTAB rule says that if the argument and or a legal contention is referred in the opening brief, that's sufficient to salvage it. And I think that's what we've done. Even if the claim of cancellation based on lack of ownership had not been stated in the petition, there would have been other mechanisms whereby that argument might have been considered by
counsel. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but what about page A2369? Realize that's your reply brief, but are you relying on that at all for raising your ownership issue? Maybe in the last couple lines there, it says registrant did not own the mark when the underlying application was filed.
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, the reality is that the reply brief makes that the ownership argument, I think, brings it in much a clearer focus. And that's correct, Your Honor.
Counsel, suppose, and I understand these are not the facts of this case, but suppose that you had raised the ownership argument in your petition, but then never mentioned it at all. No words about Sun Nutri, Smart Nutri, or anything in your entire opening brief. What then? Would it be fair for the Trademark Office to, or the TTAB, to decide the ownership question, even though you had never raised it in your brief, and therefore they didn't address it in their brief?
I think in that case, it would have been proper for TTAB to deem that argument or the legal claim to have been waived. And again, there's a TTAB rule that addresses that. And in fact, the rule even talks about the necessary threshold. And the necessary threshold is not that this guy has to be a word-by-word statement of what each legal theory is. All that it talks about is that the legal claim has to be referred to in the opening brief, and obviously evidence has to be presented. And I think we met that burden, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you, counsel. Mr. Farrell has some rebuttal time. Hey, Mr. Farrell, please proceed.
Yes, thank you. A few brief points here. There was some discussion about the implications of not filing a motion for reconsideration. The parties appear to be in agreement that there is no requirement for filing a request for reconsideration at the TTAB. I think that's settled law, and it's also specifically addressed in 37 CFR 2.145A and the In Re Magnum Oil Tools case that were cited in the briefs.
Mr. Farrell, let me ask you one question. It came up sort of in a combination of your presentation and Mr. Lee's. At the end of your presentation, you, in response to a question of mine, you cited to the Nova Steel opinion. And I'd looked at that before, but I'd kind of forgotten it. And then I took a quick look at it again while things were being rearranged. And I would say that you're on strong grounds on the Novosteel case, with one important exception, though. Here we do have the statement in the petition specifically and clearly raising the ownership issue. And then we have the issue kind of floating through the proceedings. But then, as Judge Stoll pointed out, and Mr. Lee acknowledged, there's a very clear statement about ownership in the reply. Okay? Now, Novosteel would say, I think, you can't raise something for the first time in a reply. But here we have, number one, we have it in the petition very clearly. We have this sort of undercurrent, and then we have the reply. Why does that not get Mr. Lee over the line in terms of the point being fairly raised?
Your Honor, Novosteel also explicitly states that that waiver is not decided by what's in pleadings, it's decided by what's in the briefing. That is a clear citation and teaching of the Novosteel case. And so our contention would be that it doesn't matter if it was in the petition for cancellation. If it wasn't raised in the trial briefing, the argument is waived. That would be my response to that, Your Honor.
Do the TTAB rules say anything about this?
Yes, the rules on waiver are, I think, very militantly usually enforced by the TTAB, and they're happy to get rid of arguments that are not briefed by either parties, even though there's cursory references to them in the petition. And I would also like to address some of the citations to the Biogrand trial brief that were discussed between the parties briefly. So on 2328 in the last paragraph, I think that page was also referenced by the TTAB in their decision. As the court can see, that is clearly under the heading of abandonment. It's not under the heading of any allegations of ownership by a third party. And as the court pointed out, it's also a citation to a legal point. It's not a factual argument. And likewise, 2329 was also cited by the TTAB, and that is a section on abandonment by acts or omissions. And there is no allegation there of ownership by a third party or any party other than Biogrand. And I thank you, the court, for its time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Farrell. This case is taken under submission.